Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to this new episode of Everything Racing Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Manifold, and here's what to look forward to in this episode. I'll be talking about Gunter Steiner's shock firing from Haas F1. I'll also be discussing which permanent circuits I think should feature on the Formula E calendar. But first, let's recap the most recent on-track and on-sand action that's recently taken place. So, starting with the Mexico City E-Prix, the 10th season of Formula E kicked off in Mexico City. Pascal Wehrlein secured pole position ahead of Sebastian Buemi. Notably, reigning series champion Jake Dennis only qualified in 14th, which was a bit of a shock during the qualifying session, it has to be said. In the race itself, Wehrlein drove a controlled race out front. He was unchallenged. It was actually, I think, quite a superb drive from Wehrlein to take the win. Buemi finished second, with Cassidy in third. Mitch Evans, I think, was the unsung hero of the whole race because he spent the entire race holding back Jean-Éric Vergne, who pressured him the entire time. This allowed Gunter to disappear off down the road for fourth, leaving Evans fifth, Vergne sixth, Hughes seventh, Van Dorn eighth, defending champion Dennis in ninth, and Nato in 10th. My thoughts on the race, I'll keep it brief. It wasn't much of a race. There were three overtakes the entire race, which is crazy because I just associate Formula E with crazy dive bombs and everything. The track, I just don't think is, in its current configuration, is right for Formula E, and I have some replacements in mind, which we will talk about later on. End of the day, it wasn't the greatest race in the world, to politely say, that's the politest way to put it. But it's just nice to see some single-seater racing again on our screens in 2024 to get us through this very, very, very cold winter. Moving on to the Dakar Rally. The 2024 Dakar Rally is currently ongoing at the time of recording. Some sad, tragic news from what has been happening in the Dakar Rally, as the Spanish rider Charles Falcon sadly passed away following a serious crash during stage two of the event. He was kept in a medically induced coma, but he has now sadly passed away on the 15th of January. My thoughts go out to his family and friends. It's always really, really sad when anyone dies in a motorsport event, no matter where it is, what it is, who it is. But, you know, it's unfortunately a part of this great sport that we all love. So yeah, thoughts go out to his family and friends, as it always does when anyone passes away. It's the first thing you think of is you know, that person's family and friends. Stage 9 of the event was won by Sebastian Loeb, with Carlos Sainz Sr., believe it or not, still holding on to his lead. Turning back the clock is old Carlos Sainz Sr. Fair play. I'll be sure to give a full breakdown of the event once it's finished. It's an ongoing thing, but at the time of recording, Tuesday the 16th of January, Stage 9 was won by Loeb, with Carlos Sainz Sr. still leading the charge. In F1, big news, Toto Wolff signs an extension at Mercedes to stay on as team principal and chief executive for another 3 seasons. His new contract will see him in the role until at least 2026. Good call. I can see it would have been easy for Wolff to go, right, I've done everything I can. Obviously, we're struggling. I'm going to back off. But he knows the job's not done. And I would imagine if Mercedes can even at the very least get back to championship challenging ways by the time this contract extension ends, then maybe that's when he'll go, right, my mission here is done. There's nothing more I can do. I was on top of the world for close to a decade. Now brought the team back up to the highs of highs that they had back in their heyday. And that could be it. So I'm glad to see him stick around. It's the right decision. And I think Formula One is better off for having Toto Wolff around. So I'm happy with that news, I have to say, to see Wolff stick around. You thought I was going to talk about something else. Trust me, I've got more to talk about with a certain other team principal related news. And lastly, Autosport International 2024 took place at the Birmingham NEC over the weekend of the 13th and 14th of January. Obviously, there were non-public days before that, but publicly you could go in over the weekend. If anyone listening attended, I hope you had a great time. I went last year, decided to take this year off, but I may well go back next year, because this year's looked really good, actually. And actually, it's just I feel like I need that January motorsport fix. So next year I will go back, I think. Aside from the attendance of a certain someone who I will be discussing momentarily, other noteworthy things that took place at the event included the British M Sport World Rally Championship team unveiling their new look 2024 for Puma, sporting a rather striking new livery ahead of the season opening Monte Carlo Rally on the 25th of January. So that's kind of all that's been happening on track. And other motorsport related news in the last week or so. It's been a busy week. But now let's move on to the main, well, one of the two main topics for this episode. The first of which are my thoughts on Günther Steiner's firing from Haas. So yeah, Günther Steiner's gone in what is undoubtedly the biggest news story of 2024 so far. Günther Steiner was released from Haas F1. I didn't see it coming, and I'll get into my thoughts about it in a minute. But firstly, I want to quote Gene Haas. This is what he said in an exclusive F1 Unlocked interview with Lawrence Barreto on the F1 website. He said, "It came down to performance. Here we are in our 8th year, over 160 races. We have never had a podium. The last couple of years, we've been 10th or 9th. I'm not sitting here saying it's Günther's fault or anything like that, but it just seems like this was an appropriate time to make a change and to try a different direction, because it doesn't seem like continuing with what we had is really going to work." Then in response to being questioned about whether it was a difficult decision to make, it's what Gene said. He said, "It is. I like Günther. He's a really nice person, a really good personality. At the end of the day, it's about performance. I have no interest in being 10th anymore." This next quote is from Steiner himself. He said this during an interview with David Croft whilst on stage at Autosport International this past weekend. And he simply says, "I didn't have the chance to say thank you to a few people when I left Haas F1. I would just like to thank all of the team members who I couldn't give a proper goodbye to when I left. So I'll do it this way. And I want to say also to all the fans who have supported us while I was there, it's fantastic. Thank you to everybody for the support I got and I am getting, so I'm mega appreciative." Ayo Komatsu, the team's now former trackside engineering director, who's been at the team since their debut back in 2016, will now take over as team principal. There's a lot to unpack with this story. I was shocked when I saw it. It was unexpected, mostly down to the fact that Gene has been there. You know, Gene, obviously, he's owned the place. I meant Steiner. Steiner's been there since day one in Gene's team. I'll get it out there straight away. I wasn't Günther Steiner's biggest fan, admittedly, due to how he treated Mick Schumacher, and I'm a Mick Schumacher fanboy, sue me. But the F1 paddock will miss Steiner. He was a personality and an entertaining one at that. He also wasn't given the best hand to play with, but he made the most of it, I think. And you only have to look at their performance in 2018, where they were 5th in the Constructors' Championship, to see actually with what they had, with who they had, under Steiner's leadership, they did put together a great season. And they took that step from back of the field, you know, well, backmarkers into the midfield, and actually were a strong contender in the midfield. So it is sad to see Steiner leave. It will be a big change. It will feel like there's a hole in the paddock, I think, in terms of that personality that goes around. You're guaranteed an entertaining interview. You're guaranteed a quote. Drive to Survive will definitely take a hit. Not necessarily with his upcoming, what season are we on now? 5th or 6th season? I've lost track. But that upcoming season won't be affected. But obviously, for the 2024 season edition of Drive to Survive, which will come out next year, no Günther Steiner. That will be, you know, noticeable, I think. One thing I did want to unpack with this is Gene talks about not wanting to be last anymore, and it all being down to performance as to why Steiner has been sacked. But he doesn't really seem bothered about wanting to invest in the team. And unless he is prepared to invest some serious cash, Haas will unfortunately be a backmarker for the foreseeable future. That's just the way Formula One is. The more money you put in, the more you'll get out of it. And we're talking, obviously there's the budget cap and everything like that, but by all accounts, the facilities that Haas have are not great. They're dated. You know, what they have at their disposal is just not good enough to really be able to take that step forward. And it is, you know, like I say, that 2018 season when they did take a step forward, they made a competitive car. And, you know, whenever Grosjean wasn't putting it in the wall every weekend, they got great results out of that car. So there is potential here in that team with the facilities that they have and, you know, whatever they have to work with physically in the factory. There is potential in that, you know, that whole group in that environment, but they need more investment. Gene can talk about wanting to take a step forward and not be last anymore, but you need to put your money where your mouth is, quite frankly. And if you're not prepared to do that, he needs to sell up. And I think that's been the general consensus about this topic since the news broke, that if he isn't prepared to put his, you know, hand in his pocket and really give this team his all, then he needs to sell up and move on. And he had to get more money for it than he put in to start with, especially as he's not that fussed about, you know, developing the team to be what it could be. And Steiner, by all accounts, was pushing for various improvements and investment to help try and boost their chances of improving their performance. But this ended up amounting to nothing. So in the end, I do feel like Steiner was fighting a battle he could never win. Because at the end of the day, it's all well and good him saying, look, Gene, we need money to really develop what we have. But if Gene's turning around and saying, no, you need to do better with what you already have, then that's the irresistible force meeting the unmovable object. At the end of the day, there's only one person with the power to fire anybody, really, and that is Gene Haas. And that's sad. It kind of feels like Gene is a little bit blinkered to reality in this situation. It feels like he'd be more than happy to just let that team tick along. But he then wants performance. He is being, I think, completely unrealistic in what's actually achievable with what this group of people have to play with. That's my opinion. I think it's a harsh firing. I think Steiner, like I say, I wasn't his number one fan, but I respected the guy for one, what he was trying to do with what he had. And two, he was an entertaining person. You see him on television, whether that's just hanging about in the paddock or being interviewed about something that happened on track or off track, you knew you were going to get something entertaining. So Formula One will miss Günther Steiner in some regards. In terms of Komatsu, he has his hands full and will need time to get acclimatized to this new position. But he's a decent choice. He's been there since day one. And, you know, much like with Steiner, he knows how the place runs and what it's like inside and out. And perhaps he'll be able to inject some fresh ideas into the mix, which is what I think Gene is going for. He wants to go in a different direction, you know, after close to a decade of the same thing. And if it's not being as successful as you'd hope it would be, then perhaps it is right to try and inject some new blood. So all the best to you. We all hope you succeed, but it's one hell of a task that he's got in front of him. So that's my thoughts on the Günther Steiner firing. It's surprising. It was a shock to see it. And I do feel bad for him. But you never know. In 12 months' time, a step of some kind might have been taken. And you might think, actually, maybe this wasn't such a bad thing after all. Before we get on with the second main topic for this episode, firstly, I want to thank you listening right now for choosing to spend your time to listen to this random bloke ramble on. So firstly, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you're subscribed or you're a new subscriber, either way, thank you very much for doing so. I feel like I'm ready to really dive back in, try and make this a realistic thing to do. I enjoy podcasting, and you know, to kind of give you some background about how I've been feeling about it in the last few weeks, I've been building myself up in the back end of 2023 to come back in 2024. I've really enjoyed the sort of creative process with this episode, so I'm excited about this new layout of having a little bit of news and on-track recapping at the start, then at least one main topic to me, the main feature of the episode. So I'm excited about the future in 2024, aiming for it to be free weekly, but that's a rough idea, so don't hold me to it. But look, you deserve to know kind of what I'm thinking and feeling. I want to make this work. I said this before many, many times, but I'm more than happy to be open and say in the past I've not enjoyed the creative process, but I feel good about what direction I'm taking the podcast in, so that's exciting. If you are new, or even if you're not and you haven't followed the show on social media, please go and follow it on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Again, I refuse to call it X. It's Twitter, and always will be Twitter. Yeah, go give the show a follow. So on Twitter, again, and Instagram, all of them, just search for Everything Racing Podcast. There's only one Everything Racing Podcast account on all of those channels. Go and give the show a follow. And if you think the show deserves it, please give it a 5-star rating on I think Apple Podcasts and Spotify have the ratings, so please go and follow it. The show is now available also on Amazon Music. So yeah, if that's your podcast app of choice, firstly, you're probably listening to it on there already, but also if you want to go listen to it on there instead, go nuts. Right, that's enough little rambling. Thanks again, folks. Let's move on to the second main topic of this episode. Well, I'm going to list 7 permanent circuits that I think Formula E should race on. So Formula E's bread and butter is street circuits. It always has been since the series started back a decade ago. That's crazy. On the 2024 calendar, there are 7 street tracks and only 3 permanent circuits, and those 3 being Mexico, Misano and Portland. Now, I understand that Formula E stands out from, say, Formula 1 by running races on unique street circuits. The most unique of the lot obviously happens to be the indoor-outdoor street track in London at the Excel Centre. It's very cool, but I feel like that even in itself is a proper sort of anomaly, really. It's very unique. But I personally think Formula E should continue racing on more permanent circuits. Whilst I'm not opposed to the street circuits that Formula E races on, I really like the variety that permanent circuits bring to Formula E. They bring a whole different challenge for the drivers, and from a television perspective, that added variety makes things far more interesting for the viewer, at least in my opinion. If you just have street track, street track, street track, how do you then make those street tracks feel more unique and special if all you race on is street tracks? Go to a few permanent circuits to add that spice and variety. Variety is the spice of life, I think is where I'm trying to get at there. So logistically, already having the built-in infrastructure of a permanent layout and permanent pit and paddock facilities surely has its benefits compared to having to spend serious money every year building the track and facilities the teams, personnel and fans need at a street track. I mean, I've been to a street track. I've been to Singapore for the Formula One, and I can only imagine how challenging that is logistically to set up year after year after year. And with all due respect, Formula E isn't Formula One. It isn't got that big following. So it almost in some ways, and this is not a knock on Formula E, it almost doesn't feel worth it sometimes. Unless you're doing what they do with most of the tracks, in which case you have 2 races. But even then, I still think it's a lot of effort for Formula E when there are plenty of permanent circuits, which basically are already set up for them. Plus, whilst it's not always the case, as proven with the recent Mexico City E-Prix, the racing in Formula E can be really good on permanent circuits, which are purposely designed, most of the time anyway, for great racing, to help produce great racing. So it got me thinking, what other permanent circuits could realistically host a Formula E E-Prix? Now, I want to keep at least some of these selections realistic. I mean, I actually think I've done a quite good job at listing down these seven, in that realistically, these tracks could do it. Now, Formula E tends to be, you know, their tracks tend to be about 2 miles long-ish, so I've tried to take that into perspective as well when considering which tracks to feature. There needs to be a realistic place for attack mode to be implemented properly. There also should be tracks on this list that encourage good racing and have at least one realistic overtaking spot. I think the issue with the Mexico City E-Prix is that there, in this current Gen 3 era we're going in, there isn't a realistic overtaking opportunity. It used to be down into Turn 1, but the Peritada is so difficult in these new Formula E cars that you can't get close. So, you know, in a fast corner like that, so your one overtaking spot essentially is gone. There needs to be a long enough straight and at least one proper overtaking opportunity. So those are the main criteria. I've also tried to include tracks which have already good facilities, so very little work, if any, would be needed to allow Formula E to race there and for it to look the part. Plus, I've also tried to pick tracks from not just Europe. I've tried to include tracks from all corners of the globe. Now, this isn't like a list of tracks in order, so it's not like this is the 7th best, 6th best. It's not like that. This is in a no particular order. And obviously, this being in podcast form, I can't visually show you these tracks, but definitely go and look them up online after listening to this episode, and you'll see what I mean after I've discussed each track. So let's start with the first track on the list. I've picked the Sandown Raceway, 1.29 miles, and it's in Australia. Formula E should have a race in Australia, for sure. I'm amazed that there isn't one. So let's just get that sorted out straight away. Now, whilst the facilities are basic, Formula E could spice the place up visually at least, giving it its own sort of flair, let's say. The track being around the outside of a horse racing course would certainly add a unique element to the race itself. It would be a unique setting, let's put it that way. Now, the track itself, it's a proper power circuit. Even with the supercars that race there, it's defined as a power circuit. So it would make it stand out on the Formula E calendar because of how tight the tracks tend to be. None of the tracks, I would say, you would classify as a quote-unquote power circuit. So Sandown would really stand out for that reason. Now, there are plenty of tight corners which Formula E kind of needs. So I'm thinking down into turns 2, 3 and 4. It's tight round there. Then there's a section after the back straight which is tight again. So it has that element to it that it needs to kind of be, in some ways, a traditional Formula E circuit. And that has that part to it. And it has a long back straight which will reward the brave if they attempt an overtake at the back end of the straight. I mean, if you've seen some footage of some racing down around this track and some of the crashes that they've had there, you'll know that that section of track is not for the faint-hearted. So that would undoubtedly be a heart-stopping place to watch cars overtake each other and at least attempt that overtake. And if they can't get it done down into that corner at the end of the back straight, there's a long enough pit straight to invite people to try and overtake into turn one. Now, obviously, can't show you where I mean, so go look it up afterwards. I think attack mode could be on the outside of turn 4. So it's a tight left-hander after a fiddly little chicane. Could be on the outside of that corner, leading onto the back straight. So you'd have to be strategical about when you went into attack mode, because you're essentially going to leave yourself slightly exposed, at least initially on that back straight. If you go for attack mode, you are likely to be overtaken, but then you're probably likely to at least attempt a lunge at the end of the back straight to get the position back. So that's the first track on the list. I've got Sandown Raceway in Australia. Now, the second track I have is the Red Bull Ring Grand Prix circuit. It's 2.68 miles in length, and obviously, as we know, it is in Austria. Now, I personally think this would be a great track for Formula E. Now, you could feasibly overtake into turns two at the end of the back straight and turn three at the end of the other back straight. Attack mode could be around the outside of the turn two hairpin at the end of the back straight. Again, you'd have to be brave to attempt an overtake up there, but because it's, you know, it's a fast approach, but it would be exhilarating. And in Formula One, as we've seen, that section of track is exciting in this current gen of Formula E cars. I've got the top end speed to at least make that section of racetrack exciting one for the viewer and also for the drivers, and would help encourage the overtaking opportunities throughout the E-Prix. I would venture that turn two would be the main overtaking spot, or if it's defended well, you could then have an attack on someone down into turn three. I think the track also looks the part, what with its modern facilities and beautiful backdrop. So it's kind of got everything it needs. It looks slick and it's beautiful. And whilst Formula E does race in some cool locations, having a straight up beautiful backdrop, I can't think of a Formula E track that does. So you can think from a television perspective. Imagine this futuristic, environmentally friendly race series racing in the mountains, essentially, with these gorgeous backdrops. I think that would be a unique visual spectacle for Formula E. I think you could really lap that up. It would be a real challenge as well, I think, the track. And it'd be a difficult track to set up because it's fast with some medium speed corners combined with some tight, you know, tight twisty corners. The middle sector especially, I think, would be really interesting to watch Formula E cars tackle. Because at the end of the day, these cars are not as grippy in terms of how much downforce they have compared to Formula One cars. So we're going to see a totally different way that they race and tackle these corners. And it's proven with both Formula One and MotoGP hosting some excellent races at the Red Bull Ring in recent years. I think it has the potential to do the same for Formula E. The third track on this list, and the first of two layouts I have on this list for this particular racetrack, is the Bahrain International Circuit. I have listed first the Inner Oasis Circuit. It's 1.58 miles long. Now, this is a layout that some of you may not know even exists, but with its short length, decent length pit straight, and a nice combination of slow to medium speed corners, I think it would suit Formula E quite well. And if it held at night, whilst obviously the novelty of night racing is not as strong as it used to be, for example, I still think visually it would look cool. It would be a cool track to watch Formula E cars race at. You could really go to town on adding that extra bit of Formula E flair to the place with all, you know, the lights that are around the circuit. You could do some cool inventive things there. Plus, no matter the fact that, you know, the pit straight would be the back straight essentially on this circuit compared to the Grand Prix circuit, the facilities are world class, so you don't have to worry about turning up and going, right, we're basically in a car park. This is a proper state-of-the-art circuit. Bear in mind, it's 20 years old, this place, this year, which makes me feel also very old. It's still a really slick place to go racing. The track uses a part of the endurance layout that F1 used one time back in 2010 before bringing you back onto the main Grand Prix circuit. So there's enough variety of corners, I think, to produce exciting Formula E racing. Attack mode would be around the outside of turn one. Now, you could either do this on the actual track itself, but there's also essentially, think in MotoGP, you've got the penalty lane. There's also basically, you could extend that part of racetrack and have one really long attack mode that goes all the way around the outside of the runoff. That could be cool. That could be different. And also, if you are worried about cars going into attack mode, but then a car maybe locks up and takes someone out, I mean, it's a risk you take when you go into attack mode anyway on any track, I guess, that you could get taken out because you were offline, or you could then take someone else out because you've gone offline and your tyres have got dirty. But there is an option for this outer area to be utilised if you're worried. So that would be my place for attack mode. You need to be strategical about when you go for it. It's kind of like with Sandown, in that you are going to be compromised going up the hill towards the endurance section of the layout, going up to that part of the track. So you need to pick your moments, I guess, and you would be compromised on the run up to the up the hill to the next part of the circuit. But the rewards would be just felt huge going through the twisty section. You're going to have so much more power to close the gap in those tight twisty corners leading onto the pit straight. So that's the first of the two tracks I picked for Bahrain. The second one is the Bahrain International Circuit Paddock Circuit. So this one is 2.3 miles long. And whilst the inner circuit could work due to its shorter length, the one I've just referred to, I personally think this would be better. But I still think the other one was worth mentioning. Anyone who's played the Bahrain short layout on some of the F1 games, you'll know which track I'm talking about. So you've got the main Grand Prix pit straight, turns 1, 2, 3, and then it turns off right onto the back straight where the basically the support paddock is onto that straight. And then you do the rest of the Grand Prix circuit up the hill, down the back straight towards the final corner and onto the pit straight again. Now the pit straight would be more than long enough for the drivers to mount a serious attack into turn 1. So Formula 1 has DRS, which undoubtedly helps huge. I still think with Formula E, you could really nail an attack into turn 1. And then, if you don't manage that, drivers with good racecraft could do a number of cutbacks. So, say, the car in front goes to the defensive into turn 1. Then, the car behind then cuts back. Then, does another cutback through turn 2. And then, cuts back through turns 3 and 4 onto the back straight. And then, bam! You're onto that back straight through the small curve of 5. Down the straight to turn 6, and you'll have enough momentum from the previous turn 4 tight right-hander to really mount that attack into turn 6. Now, I would change the attack mode layout for this one purely because you're going to be approaching that corner at a higher speed. There's more risk involved. You are more likely to lock up and potentially take someone out, get T-boned, if you're taking attack mode in the same corner that I said before, which was turn 1 on the inner circuit, but now this would be turn 6. I would move it to turn 8. So you've done turn 6, which is the long left-hander. You're swooping uphill through turn 7, and then you've got turn 8, which is a pretty tight right-hander leading onto the penultimate straight towards the final corner. I'd have the attack mode on the outside of turn 8 at the top of the hill. And then again, you'd be compromised as you head down the hill, but you have attack mode, and then you can really eye up that overtake into turn 1. Now, I think this layout could lead to a truckload of overtaking. There's enough twisty corners, so turns 1, 2, and 3, and 4, to bunch the cars up. Some really cool corners, so I think turns 6, 7, 8 would be really cool in Formula E cars. You'd see the cars, drivers really attacking that section, and then the straights are long enough where you really could see loads of overtaking. I would personally love to see this track be added to the Formula E calendar. Like I said before, you could really up the visual spectacle of the place. This is the one I'm thinking, one of the two on this list where I really think, maybe three, where I'm like, you could realistically do this and it would be awesome. Moving on to the fifth layout on this list. Now, this is a pipe dream one. It's a little bit unrealistic, but I'm picking it. It's my list. Deal with it. I've got the Watkins Glen short circuit with inner loop, 2.45 miles in length. And obviously, it's in America. Now, I think seeing a Formula E race around the Glen would be sick. Watkins Glen's shorter circuit would still be one of the longer races in terms of the track layout on the Formula E calendar. I would use the inner loop at the top of the circuit, as I feel the drivers could definitely launch an attack into it if they were feeling brave, both on the approach into the corner itself, but also you'd be brave in the preceding corners, so turns 2, 3, and 4 as you go up the hill. But I also think it needs to have an element of slowing the cars down, because I think attack mode could be around the outside of turn 9. Now, you really could attack this attack mode section of the track. If you were really brave, and obviously you get it wrong, because it's sort of a medium, sort of mid-ish, medium to low to medium speed right-hander before leading on to a shorter back straight, you know, you could really attack that, but if you get it too wrong, you're in the grass and you're out. It would reward the brave if you really wanted to gain those few crucial tenths of a second whilst going into attack mode. You could really minimize the damage, but you could also potentially throw yourself off the road. So I think Watkins Glen, whilst probably this and Sandown are probably the two most unrealistic tracks on this list, I would love it. It would be awesome. And quite frankly, if Formula E can choose to go to Portland and try and spice the place up, they could go to Watkins Glen. And Watkins Glen, just from its layout alone and the history the place has, it's got enough character to warrant that sort of level event, I think. So the penultimate track on this list is one that I would, again, really love to see. I have picked the Suzuka East Circuit. 1.39 miles long, and what more needs to be said? Suzuka is an iconic circuit with one of the best sectors of racetrack in the world, which is what this layout has. Basically, it's the whole of this sector. The S's would be awesome to watch in Gen 3 for Formula E cars. I think they would really attack it, but it would also be really challenging. Perfect overtaking spot into Turn 1. So if you played the Suzuka short layout on the F1 games, again, you'll know which track this is. Oh, I would love to see this. Attack mode, I think, could be around the outside of Turn 6. So that's the last of the right-handers in the S's. Oh, I would love it. It would be amazing. So fun fact, some of you may not know this, but NASCAR held a few races on this layout back in the late 90s. And the race was called the NASCAR Suzuka Thunder Special. And those races were quite fun, actually. I've watched them. They were fun races to watch. And I think Formula E would go to this track, to this layout, and it would be just one. It would be awesome. Suzuka's just the best. And this short East circuit is still mighty. I mean, the main circuit's far too long for Formula E, I think. So you need to kind of go down the shorter route. But the rest of the Suzuka's great, don't get me wrong. But that opening sector, which is what essentially this East circuit layout is absolutely incredible. So Formula E would be just at home with this layout, I think. I would love to see it. And the Japanese are mad about motorsport, so I wouldn't doubt that the place would be packed if Formula E came to town. And here's the last track on the list. Now, this is the one I really, really would love to see over all the others. I have picked Brands Hatch, the Grand Prix circuit, 2.43 miles in length. Obviously, you know, it's in Great Britain. Now, I think this would be the perfect permanent Formula E track. It's fast, plenty of challenging corners. And whilst the facilities are basic, it's kind of like with Portland. If you dress the place up, it could look really cool. It needs a little bit of work, but you could do it. At the end of the day, the facilities aren't everything. It's about the track, which is most important. And Brands is just an awesome racetrack. You'd have to be brave to try overtaking at Brands, because it's a tight circuit, which kind of suits Formula E, sort of, you know, street circuits tend to be tight, and this kind of feels the same, but obviously, it's a permanent circuit, there's multiple overtaking spots, but just imagine Formula E cars dropping down Pilgrim's Drop and throwing it up the inside of Hawthorne Bend. Would be awesome! Watching the cars on the approach down there would be amazing! And I think Paddock Hill Bend would be the main overtaking spot. So the drivers would need to stay close through clearways and the Clark Curve and onto the curved pit straight. And it would be the last of the late breakers into Paddock Hill Bend. And then you move on to what I think would be the coolest part of this. So the attack mode location, I would have on the outside of Druids. Now if you put your camera up there and you have it overlooking the backdrop of the rest of the track as the cars come down Paddock Hill Bend, leading down for the rest of the circuit, or that part of the track anyway, I think that's as perfect a location for attack mode and all things considered as it gets. Because, you know, the cars have slowed down sufficiently, you hug the inside line if you're on the racing line, but then you have to really steadily hang it out around the outside of Druids. Visually, that would look so cool, I think. You could do so much with Brands, I think, as a Formula E layout. It's just a great circuit, and out of all the tracks I've listed, this is the one I really hope actually happens. It probably won't, but hey, it takes someone like me to say, hey, you should race here, and maybe one in a 100,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, know. So there we go. Those are seven permanent tracks which I think Formula E should race on. Let me know what you think. Tell me on social media whether you think these tracks would make a good Formula E circuit, and name me some permanent circuits that you think Formula E should race on as well. Well, there you go. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Everything Racing Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show, as I said earlier, on your podcast app of choice, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Like I said, we're now on Amazon Music. Basically, anywhere you get podcasts. And if you can't find the show on your app of choice, let me know, and I'll look to get that sorted for you. If you're feeling generous, please give the show a rating and a review, ideally 5 stars if you think it deserves it, on the likes of Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And like I said earlier, be sure to follow the podcast on social media if you're not already. Just search for Everything Racing Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Once again, thank you for listening. I'm Rob Manifold, and I will see you around the next corner.